This is Macro Analytics, delivering frank conversations on global macroeconomics and market analysis outside the mainstream, featuring discussions and debates between Gordon T. Long, publisher and editor of GordonTLong.com, and his guests. The content of this discussion is strictly the opinion of the participants. It is in no way a solicitation for business, nor is it to be considered investment advice of any sort. Always consult a registered investment advisor before making any investment decision. These discussions are extremely hard-hitting and terribly frank, and parental discretion is advised. Now, on to the show.
Good morning. I'm Gord Long with GordonTLong.com. It's my pleasure to have back with me this morning Charles Hugh Smith, well-known and writer on the web, the publisher of the website OfTwoMinds.com. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Gordon. Glad to be here, as always.
I hope you're having a great summer.
So far, so good.
So, just too many things to watch in the news, right? We're going to talk about Greece this morning. There's Puerto Rico, which is a story we could have chose. China is just, it's probably even more serious right now than Greece, but that'll be next show maybe. But we're here to talk about Greece. Charles, before we begin, I do need to mention to our audience that this is a dialogue. Discussion Charles and I have once a month, have had for at least 3 years now. This is not an interview. Each other, just understand it's not the format that we use with all of the Financial Repression Authority interviews that we're doing. Charles, as I said, we're gonna talk about Greece, what we're seeing in Greece, and under three different areas here: the drivers, the problems, and the observations. But I'd really like to do it in the context of what we can see and learn, because it's my opinion that this could be a template for state and local governments in the United States and other areas, the peripherals, that is, the places that can't print their own money, that can't debase their own currency to get themselves out of a problem. The federal government can do that, but the state and local governments in the United States, for example, can't do it the same as Greece. So there's a lot of similarities. And I think some of the patterns that we're going to talk about, potentially we may see here in a couple of years. A comment on that?
I think you're absolutely prescient in that, Gordon, and that there's only a handful of all the nations and regions in the world who can print their way out of debt. And as we have covered in previous programs, that's not really a long-term solution. That just kind of keeps things going a little longer. But for any entity that can't print its own money, then the crisis is going to be very near term.
Yeah, and we're seeing it. And we can go. I did a show with Ms. Shedlock, and we talked about Illinois, and we talked about Chicago, and a number of cities in Illinois that are in serious financial shape. And so, what's happening is the problem are coming from either you want to call it the peripheral, the Greece. Or in the United States, the peripherals are actually from the bottom up, local government through to the city, to the state. Difference is, and frankly, it could be worse in the United States, because in Greece, they at least can tax. In the United States, the federal government's primarily the taxation. Yes, we pay state tax, but it's small. At the city local level, it's property taxes. They can't print, and they have not the same leverage on taxation. So that's why the problems, in my mind, are appearing in the peripherals and at the bottom in that hierarchy in the United States. Anyway, let's talk about the drivers, and you put this list of five together that you felt really were from a big picture, a macro view of what is causing the problems in Greece before we talk about exact problems.
Right, Gordon. And my goal here is to contextualize all this sort of ways, you know, like there's Miracle and there's Cyprus and, you know, all of that sort of negotiation that makes for good theater and fills the news channel. But it doesn't really help us understand what's going on under the surface. Like, why did this become a crisis that's gone on for 5 years? So there's 5 points. One is the flaws within the euro itself. And there's two main flaws in the euro. One is there's no fiscal integration to accompany the currency integration. In other words, the countries are all using the euro, but there's the eurozone doesn't have any mechanism to enforce fiscal prudence. And so any state within...
Is that different than in the United States, the federal government having any control over state spending? Other than transfer payments?
That's right.
They don't, do they?
No, states can sell as many bonds and borrow as much money as they can.
And do the states have any really control over towns and cities and the municipalities?
None.
No. So, proliferate spending, and then when they get themselves in a problem, you notice they all rush upwards looking for bailouts, so, right?
And that's exactly what your point was about periphery and core. Periphery fades. Another problem with the euro is when you get rid of your national currency, you can't adjust for trade imbalances by depreciating your currency. Like in the old days, if Greece was borrowing too much and had a huge trade deficit, the drachma would value, German and other imports would become too expensive, so imports would decline. People would coming to Greece because it was the more of a bargain because the currency had devalued. So that mechanism's gone with the euro. The euro's the same in Germany as it is in Greece, and so Greece no longer has the tools to depreciate its currency to match, the reality of its productivity and trade imbalance. So
another way of saying it, tools is a polite way of saying it. What happens when the currency debases or falls in price, all of a sudden things get more expensive. So the people really feel the hurt. They don't start to see it, what the reason is. Things just got more expensive. So their standard falls. They're forced to pull in their horns. But the politicians don't have to stand there and say, this is what we have to do. They don't have to talk about austerity. It's just happening. But in this situation, when you can't print your currency and hide behind that stealth movement, and you got to say, here's what we have to do, that's politically not feasible. Doesn't work, right? And we've seen one government after another in Europe fail because of trying to put in austerity. Democratically, unless you have a currency that debases subtly in a stealth manner.
Well, Gordon, that's another parallel with the state and local
government.
Is that people don't want austerity. The state and local government has limits on how much they can borrow to cover the shortfall between what they've promised their income. And so that imbalance is the structural sort of context of what we're talking about. That what we're seeing is everybody's trying to fill this structural imbalance, and you really can't. So that's another problem with the Eurozone is there's the mercantilist nations like the Netherlands and Germany are huge exporters. And then the Portugal, Spain, Ireland, Greece, and it are importers. They run structural trade imbalance. Every year they need to come up with some money because they're buying more than they're producing, right? So the only way within the Eurozone to rebalance is to borrow money. There's no way to depreciate your currency, so you have to borrow the money. And so then the end result is the Eurozone is just awash with an incredible level of debt, not just Greece. I mean, it's Italy, it's Spain, and even France and Germany have large amounts of debt, public and private. The last two points are, in a country like Germany or the Netherlands, which is not under austerity, then all the abstraction. Whereas to the, in Greece, it's not an abstraction. It's very concrete. The pain is real. So to expect those two sociological states of mind to find middle ground is asking a lot. In other words, it's for people to whom it's an abstraction, they're going to be operating at a completely different level than people who are suffering the reality of austerity. And then the last point is the same thing we have in the state and local level. The demographics in Europe are just really negative for paying pensions. The birth rates are very low. Immigration creates social conflicts. There's generally about two workers for every retiree. And in some countries, it's dropping below. So promises that were made when there were five workers for each retiree are just can't be met when there's less than two workers per retiree.
Sounds similar to what we have in the United States. The shifting demographics of how many people that are moved out of the workforce, 92 million, by the way, that are workforce age that are not in the workforce.
Yes.
That has fallen the last, what, 6 years to that level, who can't find work or find, in this case, they just have removed themselves or they're now in part-time. So we have the demographic shift, and with 75 million baby boomers retiring and the pension funds, both private and publicly, so underfunded at zero interest rate ability to earn right now, we have this problem in spades also. And the first thing we're seeing is it's showing up in pension payments. Simple. The bottleneck in Greece, why the negotiations broke down, is the EU, the ECB, wanted cuts in the pensions and they wanted VAT tax. They said immediate cash out was about pensions. The issue in Puerto Rico, blowing up $72 billion in debt, is about pension payments. So they're willing to give more debt, if you would, but it's that they got a cut on the pensions, and that became the stumbling block. That both governments said, I cannot do that. That is politically unacceptable. I would rather default on the debt. And so pensions have become the real bugaboo here. And different matter of fact, I would argue our pensions could be even more a bigger and more serious problem of the degree of public pensions. So the question on the table now, Charles, and we have up here is, okay, who's going to pay the bills? That is the daily money that's got to go out. Who's going to pay out the debt if it's ever paid? Who is responsible for the solution? We can kind of debate that and what are the incentives for anybody fixing it? And the players on the right hand side here, it's a pretty short list, but these are the ones that have got to solve the problem. And when we look at it, I got a chart up here showing the amount of debt is $320 billion that is out there. I noticed, first of all, there aren't any banks on there. You notice that? There are the ECB. The banks are the ones that have lent money to these places, whether the ECB or the EU, and who have guaranteed, made pledges to it. So the question then is on the table, not just who is responsible, but who can actually pay? Who is capable of making guarantees and pledges that are sound enough that they can accept? Because the EU is in phenomenal debt level problems right now. The banks are so heavily over leveraged, whether they can afford, they certainly can't afford haircuts, whether they can afford more lending. So, who's going to pay the bills? Well, who's got the money? Who actually has the money or the capability? Who will pay the debt? Who can afford the debt losses right now? Because it's not going to be paid. It's they're going to have to be written off. And that's what Greece is arguing. We want debt relief. In other words, we want somebody to take a write-off because we can't, it's unpayable. Everybody admits it's unpayable, but who can afford the write-offs? Right. They can't. But there's no question, Charles, who's responsible here on the solution? Greece is responsible. But they can't do anything, and they've proven they're irresponsible. And what are the incentives here? It comes down to who's going to be the biggest loser is going to be the one most incented, right? Sort of. And yeah, I interrupt. You were going to say something.
No, I was just going to add that we've got $320 billion, it's now closer to €340 billion that Greece owes and can't pay. I think in Spain, it's 1 trillion euros. In Italy, it's over 1 trillion euros. So what we're really talking about is more on the order of 3 or 4 trillion that isn't going to be paid, that's going to be defaulted at some point. So right now, the powers that be in Europe shifted all the risk of default, as you noted, from the private banks, mostly German and French, to the taxpayers of the EU nations. So now the taxpayers are on the hook. So where is the default going to fall? Well, the taxpayers are going to be paying taxes and getting nothing in return for it, right? I mean, right now they're the ones who are going to suffer. And the politicians chose the taxpayers because they hoped that they could spread the risk and the out over a vast population of 300 million people. But the numbers are so big that it's going to hurt.
Where does it end?
Yeah.
When does it end, or what will bring it to an end? This kicking the can down the road has become an art form here for at least 6 years as we go from extending Bhutan to kick the can to they're just one name after another, but it's this falsifying, it's creating distortions that in reporting allow us to do that. And while I'm thinking of Chicago. And the comment here that I made about pensions being the one that kind of, when the can wouldn't move in Puerto Rico, when it wouldn't move in Greece. We saw that in Chicago. Mitch pointed it out. And when they were using bonds to pay interest on the debt and pay the pension fees. That's not what it's supposed to be. Bonds are supposed to be for infrastructure. And by the way, infrastructure spending in America at a state and local level has completely collapsed. It's almost non-existent because they don't have the money. So they're just barely able to pay the operating obligations. Well, the Supreme Court came down and ruled that they can't do that. And it stuck Illinois with about a $2.2 billion budget problem out of nowhere. They suddenly ran up against the wall where the game they were going to do was a problem. And so we're seeing that crack all the way across the board. And what I'm trying to argue here is we're running out of runway, and where it's going to be, I think, is going to be in the pensions. These obligations that they, and we have 75 million baby boomers in America retiring. And we've talked about this on a number of shows, you and I, because there's no way out of it. That's what I'm trying to say. That's real money that's got to be paid out. Government can at the state, local, Greece, etc. So who's gonna, and how much debt can they keep piling on? But one of the things that I'm seeing here, Charles, is these are signals we learn, and that's what I think the best thing we can learn from. We can speculate all day on how this is going to be resolved, but what we can do is watch what things happen to learn from it. We saw Argentina a few years ago grab in Poland. Almost a modus operandi when you get into trouble to grab the pension, how you do that in the banking system. Then we saw bail-ins in Cyprus. And now that's fixed legislation around the world, including in the United States, that they have the right. They will take the pension, your deposits, if a bank gets into problems. I understand we're FDIC insured, but is there enough FDIC for the problem? And as you see in Greece, they're down where they're saying 8,000 euros is the bottom. So if you've got more than 8,000 euros, it's going to be gone. And that may be lower because that's what it's going to take to keep the banks solvent. So is that a lesson that we're learning here and we may see? So I'm really worried about the bail-ins. The other thing I'm seeing, and I like yours of your observations, but what I'm seeing is the ATMs are being used as a weapon today. I mean, immediately we start shutting down the ATMs in that you can only, in Greece's case, you can only take out 60 euros a day. So you're all lined up every day and you got to be there every day or you won't be able to accumulate enough for that at the end of the month. And the chances are that may stop. So, and how quickly the shelves emptied in Europe are in Greece was only a matter of days and suddenly they were bare. And an example that I saw here in a sequence, Charles, was on Sunday night when the Prime Minister, a week ago Sunday, when the Prime Minister went before the nation and called for a referendum.
Mm-hmm.
The country was decidedly being yes for this. They just wanted things to be positive. And then immediately the next day, ATMs were now restricted on the amount of use. Within the next 48 hours, they were talking about pensions being restricted, and the payouts and then. And all of a sudden, it was a huge issue, especially as the stores started to try, to the point that on Wednesday, so you had Sunday night, Tuesday, Monday and Tuesday, Wednesday night, emergency meetings, Wednesday morning, the Prime Minister said, we will go ahead with the negotiations with Europe. We will capitulate. He was very, very clear that he was going to do that. And because he had no choice because of the threat on the pensions. Then what happened is, he still was going to hold the referendum. But between then and Sunday, when the referendum was held, all of a sudden the polls started shifting. And as everybody knows, we got an overwhelming yes vote. So it was like the people said, felt that they had been threatened and saw the extortion that was being put to them, the gun, by the use of ATMs, that in spite of hurting themselves, they said, we're not going along with this. But it demonstrates to me how we're using these new tools to force people to do something, but it didn't work in the case of Greece so far. But I just read here, before that we just started taping, there's key individuals in Europe saying, yeah, we'll wait till Wednesday, and we're taping this on a Tuesday, we'll wait till Wednesday when the anarchy begins because there's no money in the banks' accounts. So, in the banks to withdraw at the ATMs. This is a very dangerous game, but this is the kind of thing, whatever's resolved, that we can see when things get bad, the sequence that will happen. How it's resolved, that's another discussion. Comments on anything I just said?
Well, Gordon, I think that you've laid out a template that we've seen throughout history, and back in the Great Depression, what destroyed people's financial security was they had money in a bank, which they thought was safe and secure and was their money. Well, then the bank closes because it's insolvent and their money's lost, right? So then the FDIC was instigated to guarantee, you know, every average person's account.
There's that word again.
Yeah. Guarantee, right?
Government guaranteeing.
Yeah.
Not paying, not their guaranteeing. But anyway, I interrupted.
Yeah. No, and so, but really what we have now, what you're describing is, if your cash can only be taken out in tiny little dribbles, and it's can be bailed in other words, appropriated by the government to save the bank, then how different is it than a bank closure? There's almost no difference. I mean, you dribble out of your ATM. So another question that comes up is what can the average person do to protect themselves from what you've outlined? In other words, we can see the template is being formed around the world. Bail-ins in Cyprus, you know, so don't keep huge amounts of cash in a bank thinking it's yours. It's not yours.
It's the banks.
Yeah, and it may be.
And as we go to a cashless society, and we've talked right. about this, and war on cash, restrictions, and if we go where, I know the convenience of cashless in cards, but when we surrender the use of cash, we lose total control. Our money never leaves the bank. We think we can move it to payments, but there could be fees, restrictions that can change, as Greece learned, in a nanosecond. You can't withdraw it. You can't take it out in a cashless society. But this is the kinds of shifts that we're losing control of our freedoms in many ways without even knowing it subtly. Well, it's not even so subtle. It's blatant, actually.
Well, Gordon, I think that might be the two big lessons. The loss of liberty in these financial sort of gaming to try to kick the can down the road one more time, and that the losses are going to be shifted to us, you know, the taxpayers and the people with money in the bank, right? And then the second kind of issue that we're describing is that there's going to be defaults and there's going to be losses distributed somewhere in the system. Because, you know, a loan or a bond, that's a debt to one side and it's an asset to the other. So if you're going to default on $3 trillion or 3 trillion euros of debt, that's 3 trillion euros of assets that are going to vanish. 3 trillion, euros of collateral that's going to vanish.
And collateral that's been leveraged up orders of magnitude at 50 right. to 1. So when you lose a dollar of collateral, there's a lot of money that suddenly's got to be pulled back to keep solvency. So that's why they can't take the losses. That's why the collateral is so impaired, and it's undermining or supporting a nearly a $700 trillion swaps marketplace based on interest and currencies that could be exposed if interest rates shift or defaults start to happen and margin calls begin. I'm not saying that's going to happen. That's the seriousness of the game that we're playing here. So, you know, but in banks, Charles, it's always been that if the bank went broke, you lost your money. I mean, you took the risk by putting it in there, but you paid a decent income on interest, et cetera, to keep it there. Well, those days, as you said, were, quote, fixed with FDIC insured, so that there was this sense of protection that your money was safe and you wouldn't lose. But really, we're right back to where we were before FDIC. But new Nick, you're exposed. The bank has a problem, and by the way, these are all banking problems. You think your money's yours, it's gone. So the question is, why would you keep your money in a bank today? Well, to pay my credit card. Well, in other words, it's a utility function, but it certainly isn't a place you want to store your wealth, is it? Any amount of money, don't think. So it starts to beg the question you suggested. Maybe the days of cryptocurrencies are really just Bitcoin, and I'm not supporting them. I'm just saying alternative ways of removing yourself from this trap. It's a new system. It's a new world. Things are evolving in real time. But these problems are coming to America.
That's the unavoidable conclusion of what's happening in Greece. It's a precursor of what every indebted government and level of government is going to face at some point.
The last point I'd make wrap here, you know, I was amazed, and I talked about the mission. Though as the negotiations were going on, it was clear that the government to us was telling the people to get the money out of the bank. And people were withdrawing money, well-to-do people, in huge amounts. And it was like, when negotiations started breaking down, it was like, who's got any money? Who has possibly left their money? Well, it turns a huge part of our society believed things were going to be all right, that they're safe, and now they're learning. So sometimes the crisis, people, it's been very, very evident, very, very obvious. And then when it happens, you learn the lesson and you say, why didn't I pay any attention? No. Charles, more all worse writings.
Please visit me at oftwominds.com.
Again, next.
Okay, thank you, Gordon. Great.
Bye.
This has been Gordon T. Long, editor and publisher of GordonTLong.com. New recordings are posted regularly and can be found at GordonTLong.com. New show notifications are available through RSS feed, iTunes, and other social networking venues at GordonTLong.com.